From iAfrican Media, this is iAfrican Bites, a podcast that features commentary on African news, insights, opinions, and analysis with tech industry leaders and professionals. The podcasts are from interviews conducted by the iAfrican team, whether at events or when needed for commentary. I'm Badawun Kotsokwane, host and editor-in-chief for iAfrican.com, spelled www.iafrican.com.
In this episode of iAfrican Bites, we're joined by the Center for Analytics and Behavioral Change. We use advanced social media listening tools to track and monitor social media sentiments around national hot-button topics and events. Now, senior research analyst Houston Vidboy, who led the Xenophobia Social Media Analytics Report, and journalist Mulebueng Mokoka, who worked on the National Shutdown Deep Dive Report, take us through the data and analytics from these partnerships. Given that 70% of South Africans use the internet, it was crucial to analyze and monitor social media activities leading up to the widely anticipated hashtag national shutdown on the 20th of March 2023. Now, looking at the report titled Working for Democracy, we're in discussion with the Center for Analytics and Behavioral Change about the recently released analysis on internet behavior that preceded and contributed to the national shutdown. Evening, Lebu. I think the first question needs to be this, right? What was the objective behind the report, and did you achieve this objective in this report?
I think the objective behind this report was to just to analyze the national shutdown conversation as a whole. Now, if you remember, in the beginning of the year, this conversation emerged because of the ongoing electricity price increases, and on top of that, the load shedding. And this was more of a follow-up, just to look at what are people talking about? Is this really about load shedding? If you would refer to the second one, which was the drawn from the EFF's national shutdown, which was also for the removal of President Cyril Ramaphosa, we're also looking as to are the minor victories being claimed given the timing of the shutdown, and is the mandate still the same from what happened?
I mean, Lebu, that's wonderful. Now, I mean, this is not the first report. You've had the xenophobic report. You've had the Dirty Dozen report looking at the unrest in South Africa. You've had the online RET network analysis report. Just from a high level, are there any sort of similar trends we've seen from previous report to this national shutdown report?
I think what I can say is that we see a lot of similarities in the authors engaging in the conversation. So if you look at the first national shutdown report, you'll see that it kind of turned into a Ramaphosa versus Zuma argument online, who was the better president. Hashtags such as Ramaphosa versus Zuma were trending or were emerging in our analysis. So if you look at all these conversations, the one thing that they do have in common is the argument online on who is the better president and what makes one president better than the other. So you'll find that the people engaging in that conversation are more or less the same, or are appearing in one report and appearing in the same or another report focusing on a different issue.
Okay, now let's zone in on the national shutdown report. With the national shutdown report, what were the areas of focus specifically in this report?
So the EFF one, as you know, the EFF came out and they're like, no, we can't take load shedding anymore. And also President Cyril Ramaphosa must resign. And we analyzed this conversation online. We analyzed the hashtags and what necessarily was being said by different people. And what we were trying to get from the report is, again, we focus more on conversation than anything else. So what came out of this report was there were a lot of authors that we were acting in a way that we would consider to be suspicious. So more retweets than original tweets. There was a lot of, in the national shutdown category in the report itself, there was a lot of focus on Ramaphosa and how he must fall than it was about load shedding. So that also came out. And there were some authors who were using the opportunity to kind of like undermine the media. So this is what you're in the media. The media is telling you that so many people turned up when in fact this many people turned out. So we're just looking at what are the conversations? What are people who are supporting the national shutdown saying? What are people who are pulling against it saying? So those were some of the things that we have found.
I read through the report like 2 times, and it was very rich in terms of just the analytics. And, you know, it's always, you know, interesting, really, really interesting when you have a critical mind to see the sort of, you know, engagements and what, you know, I guess South African cyber landscape is saying about, you know, these things. Brother Eustace, this is where you come in. Now, social media, you're using social media content monitoring tools, right, to extract the data. What exactly is the tech stack? How do you extract these data?
Sure thing. So we make use of social media analytics tools called Brandwatch and Data EQ, which essentially allow us to delve deeper into conversations to get an understanding on the total number of mentions within a conversation, as well as the number of retweets, where we are then able to calculate what the retweet percentages are in a conversation, which is always insightful, as it shows us how many unique authors are engaging within the conversation, and could also potentially point to any kind of coordination within the conversation whereby narratives are at risk of being manipulated. Our tools also allow us to see when hashtags or phrases are used the most along a timeline, which then assists us to understand why they are trending by looking at the context for the day or the week concerned. Our tools also then allow us to identify top authors within the conversation, which is how we are able to identify whether or not an account is suspicious in its activity or not. There's quite a bit of data that we have to work with, but it all means that our research is just that much more robust, that our reports are then also more robust.
Brother Houston, but I did notice in the report, I mean, it is mentioned in the report, right, that your social media listing tool, or crawlers rather, were mostly crawling on Twitter, not on Facebook. Now, you know, it's quite surprising because, you know, Facebook has a lot more in terms of South African context, that is. Say Facebook has got 27 million users, Twitter only 9.3. Does that not create a blind spot in terms of really understanding the landscape of the narrative online, that is?
Is a blind spot. Our social media listening tools are more adapted to using Twitter, and the majority of our data does come from Twitter, but we are also able to draw data from Facebook, media articles, blogs, and so forth. It's just that one thing that we consider is that when it comes to Twitter, it's that most politicians have official accounts that can be easily followed and analyzed, which is not always the case for the other social media platforms.
Okay. No, it makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. Now, in your keyword research approach, I noted that you use both head keywords and long tail keywords. You know, your head keywords would be single word keywords like dictatorship, hashtag fighters, and long tail keywords would be words with 3 or plus words, which would be like hashtag national shutdown, Ramaphosa must fall. Now, the thing about head keyword search research is that, you know, it tends to give you poor intent and low quality traffic, you know, because it's one singular word and the quality of the conversation wouldn't be as robust or as in depth as a long tail keyword research. But I mean, when you use the head key research approach, how do you give the keywords, the intent, the conversations more depth and quality and accuracy when it comes to the keywords?
Yeah, this is a very good question, and it's one that we as researchers constantly have to grapple with, because ultimately we want to get the best balance in terms of quality data that is directly related to the conversation that we are wanting to better understand without any noise or any data that will not be helpful. Just to get back to your question, head keywords are essential because they focus in on a particular hashtag or a word that is integral to the conversation. The risk here is that we exclude good content that does not contain the head keyword, which is then why we would make use of longer keywords, or as you call them, longer tail keywords, where we can draw out quality content that maybe does not include the head keyword, but is essential to the conversation. And that's just, it's a balancing act that we always try to get right, because we want to be as accurate as possible and get the best quality data from our social media analytics tools.
Again, here's the thing about long tail. Yes, long tail keywords, rich content, rich conversation. However, but in this context, you see with the EFF shutdown, you have a lot of traffic and a lot of competition for these long tail keywords. Now, what metrics do you use to distinguish between positive sentiment and negative sentiment and all this traffic coming in from these long tail keywords?
So luckily, our social media analytics tools have built in sentiment analysis. So we are able to see quite generally what the sentiment is for a particular post or mention. But with that being said, what we always do is to double check what the tool is returning in terms of sentiment analysis. And then we will make that final call on a particular post as to whether it has positive or negative sentiment.
Brother, another portent, I have to ask you this question. In the report, you mentioned the fact that you use TrueNest, InVid, and a bunch of other open source social media analytical tools to identify authors and creators of these tweets. Are there any noticeable sort of trends regarding the use of bots, and what percentage would this be, behind? This is now the actors behind these tweets. Are they mostly bots? Are they mostly natural human beings? What are we seeing?
Mostly for these accounts that are pushing out in excess of 500 tweets a day, and in some instances, 1,000, that is very suspicious activity. It means that as a person, you would have to tweet every minute or second minute, which is not always realistic. So there is evidence for the use of bots, and we certainly highlight these accounts that we feel are very suspicious in their activity. Maybe Lebo, I'm not sure if you've had similar experiences in the work that you've been doing, but certainly on my side, there are instances where you can see that this account, very suspicious. The number of tweets in a day just all points to the use of bots. I don't know, Lebo, if you want to come in there.
I mean, there are multiple theories as to why an account will be putting out, or how it's even humanly possible for one account to be putting out so many tweets in a day. I mean, there could be multiple people operating that account. They could be using a lot of tools, to send out those tweets. There are multiple theories. Unfortunately, we're not able to tell at this point what exactly or how this has been done. But we have, for example, TruthNest, as you mentioned, it measures a percentage, the likelihood of an account being a bot account. So each individual account, depending on what your plan is, it can analyze, for us, it's like 2,000 of the account's latest tweets. So different ways as to how these accounts push as much content as they do. But yeah, one day maybe we'll find out.
To tie it in with the xenophobic report, and you can come in and elaborate more on that. With the xenophobic report, were you seeing a similar trend? I know we're speaking about the EFF, but with the xenophobic, was it mostly natural persons, or was there a suspicion of, you know, bots and a similar trend?
So far within the xenophobia conversation, there are a handful of accounts that are suspicious. We have a feeling that as we get closer to the national elections, that the xenophobia conversation will become a lot more popular.
This is from the data and insights that is popping up right now as you speak.
Correct. So we are already seeing that xenophobia is being used by political parties and their leaders, as well as individuals, in a manner that us as the CABC are used to encountering when there is coordination or suspicious activity.
Very interesting. I mean, it goes into the same, you know, sentiments as you know, your I mean, we're seeing a lot of Operation Dudula things happening on Twitter, your border control. And I think, you know, Houston, you touched on it, general elections. Let's look into the future. I mean, what sort of trends outside of the bots, what sort of other trends or narratives should we, you know, start picking up leading into the 2024 elections, or should we be expecting leading to the general elections next year?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, xenophobia does definitely look like one of those conversations that will heat up and will become more important as we lead into that election period. We are already seeing political parties on either side of the conversation, whether it's the EFF and the Pan-African stance. You would have seen recently that the hashtag FootSec EFF was quite popular. So these are the kinds of things where a political party's view on this issue could then be used as a way to either garner support or to divert support away from them. And these are just things that we are noticing in the data at the moment.
And of course, as time goes on, more stuff will start popping up. Because I think, you know, with the national shutdown, yes, it did get, you know, national acclaim, but the general elections is a much more bigger event, or sort of bigger conversation, because everybody, you know, votes, all the way from 18 years old all the way to 60 plus. You know, a lot more people are involved in that process. And all these people from 18 to 60, we're all online, be it Facebook, TikTok, YouTube. Should we expect, are we seeing the use of AI from either political parties or civil society in spreading, you know, messages on Twitter, fake speech, bots, videos, old pictures, narratives? Are we seeing the use of AI technology being incorporated in this?
I can't say for sure for AI. But I think what I can speak on is the fact that national elections, or elections in general, they're usually a time for mudslinging. Look at what the other party hasn't done, you know. So now we're looking into, if you look into the national shutdown, or the national shutdown conversation as a whole, it's all about electricity. Why don't we have power back at stage 5, stage 6? So things like that, service delivery, unemployment. So the techniques used to spread the look at what they haven't done, I cannot speak of. It's something that we should be looking forward to as we move closer.
Leb, we're in a very interesting question. What type of, I mean, this is now for, I guess, graduates and students. What type of person, what inclination do you need to have, or skill, or sort of educational background to do this type of work of, you know, social media listening and digging, you know, this hashtag up and, you know, researching it and analyzing narratives? What sort of academic background do you need to do this type of job?
I mean, we hail from different academic backgrounds at the CABC. For example, I'm a journalist. Houston is more of a researcher. But personally, I do feel like there's certain open source tools that need to be taught for people who are be working in the media or working with social media. I would have loved to have access to these tools maybe at the earlier part of my career. It's now, from a journalistic perspective, a lot of things happen online. People just put in first before they talk to the media nowadays. So I'm not going to speak on any academic background. I think if you're just working within the space of handling information, especially public-facing information, you need to get equipped with or have some sort of knowledge of these open source tools. I mean, some of them are as easy as, for example, Truthnet is as easy as taking an account or the handle of an account and just punching it in and just seeing the likelihood of a certain account being a bot account. When you see something Twitter, we have a whole team of dialogue facilitators that question the authenticity of information before it gets out. So it can be as simple as think before you share. So open source.
Yeah, brother, you said I'm gonna throw that question to you as well.
Yeah, so in terms of background, or I think it's more also to do with interests. Like, do these kinds of conversations interest you as a person? And if it does, then you would enjoy the work because we've got all the tools. And as we just mentioned now, many of them are readily available. You go onto a website and you put in a handle of an account and you'll be able to get analytics on that account. So I think it just comes down to, does this kind of work interest the individual? Because if it does, then they will do well in it and they will enjoy it.
As a follow-up to that, just on a different aspect, guys, you're using some really powerful tools, right? Like some really powerful tools that can do a lot of interesting, a lot of cool, you know, nerdy stuff, but really cool. Is there some sort of ethical framework of some sort that, you know, the center subscribes to as you're using these tools? What boundaries, you know, what limitations, what do you look at, you know, type of thing?
The short answer is yes. We do adhere to ethical guidelines. And because we are a research-focused institution, we are guided by the principles of academic research, where we are guided by the data, and that is what we then use in our reporting. So there are ethical and academic considerations to the way that we work.
Houston, I have to ask you this before we go. The center mostly uses these tools, and what your mandate for now is mostly an observational mission, right? To extract, to observe, and extract insights and data. However, you know, whether maybe now or maybe in the future, is the center having discussions maybe to use a more offensive approach to defend some you know, democracy, or you know, to have an offensive approach when it comes to, you know, things like xenophobic sentiments and those type of things? Maybe it's, you know, to counter these narratives online by creating content, or you know diffusing the narrative. I don't know, but are they, is that on the cards for the center? Is that what you're thinking about for the future? Are you even thinking about that?
That is a very good question. And because we are passionate citizens and we have a mandate of protecting our democracy, it's only natural for us to then start thinking about and talking about how would we then go about defending our democracy? What does that look like for us as an organization? So we are definitely having the conversations, and I'm sure that it's in our future to be more on the front line in terms of defending our democracy. But what exactly that looks like, I can't tell you at the moment, because we are still figuring that out as an organization.
Lebu, you know, the center has mostly been doing a lot of, you know, observational missions in your reports. The mandate for now has been observational, you know, mission, meaning you observe, you extract insights, you extract data, and then you explain this data for us. However, you know, looking into the future, you know, are there conversations in the office? Are there conversations long term to sort of approach using the tools that you guys have to approach more from an offensive point of view to defend democracy? You know, you have very sensitive and very powerful, you know, events happen in the country, such as your elections and xenophobia. You know, what are you considering offensive, you know, approaches to maybe, you know, diffuse certain narratives, create content to counter, you know, certain negative content? You know, that type of thing.
I mean, at the moment, I think the thing that we're doing the best is making people think before they share, making them think about what they're sharing, how like, we do not have, unfortunately, an early warning system, but I do hope that is in the pipeline for the future. But we do produce a lot of content media wise, and through the help of our dialogue facilitators, we do produce a lot of content to just make people aware of these are the tools that you can use to spot like from fiction, and these are the things that you need to think about before you share a post to another person.
Lebu, Brother Houston, I love the work that you're doing at the Center for Analytics and Behavioral Change. Definitely, we're looking forward to more conversations. The elections are coming up. I'm already excited to hear what, you know, the national elections is going to, you know, how it's going to turn out online. iAfrican is a, you know, technology publication, so we're purely online, and we're fascinated and, you know, super excited about anything online and online news and online insights and data. So we'll see you very soon.
Thank you for listening to iAfrican Bytes. Please share your feedback with us on our socials. On Twitter at iAfrican, on LinkedIn at iAfrican.com. And check out our other podcasts, The Tefo Mohapi Show, Take Legal Matters, and The Lead Creator, on all podcast streaming platforms. And also make sure to head over to www.iAfrican.com. That is iAfrican.com/radio. And subscribe for notifications. iAfrican Bytes is an iAfrican Media original show, produced by Nzalo Mbangana and content producer and host by Don Kotokwane.